Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction that says that we should have just weights and balances in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and the value of clad coin or currency. And you know that's very true when we're dealing with banks and government and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper over gold and silver. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good reason. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933 when they did it, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would have to first take away the people's gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property, and then to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we first must regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law seating package? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and go to the page that contains our free general law CD package. It's now up online, and you can download it right off the Internet. Or if you're listening on radio around the world someplace and you don't have Internet connections, then call us direct. That's at 417-273-4967 and ask for it, and we'll send you one. All right, that address again is georgegordon.org online, and our phone number is 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, last week we talked about nuclear weapons and nuclear bomb war, a real downer, no doubt about it. This week, let's take up government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights. Oftentimes, people will call me and they'll complain about the government doing this or the government doing that. Government's oppressing me with taxes and regulation and socialism, and they're interfering with my privacy rights and taking my guns and licensing me, and they're interfering with my health care, and they won't let my wife's midwife attend to her, they won't let me practice homeschool, or, you know, they're just on and on. There's just something that government is doing that's interfering with something that you want to do or would like to do, and government wants to regulate it. It's called socialism, fascism, Nazism. You know, there's a communism, there's just a number of terms, political terms that we hang on these government interventions. What do you think is going to happen in the future? Do you think there's going to be more of it or less? Do you think we're more likely to follow the North Korean example of total tyranny or the former American standard of total liberty? What do you think is going to come out of this? Which nations in the world, which countries are going to be the better places to live? Now, here in the United States, we actually have a system by which we grade the states, and the Freeman Institute is one that grades them. I'll give you an illustration. The most socialistic and oppressive state in the Union is California, and the best state in the Union to conduct business or overall general freedom is South Dakota, and all of the other 46 states fit somewhere in between. Now, just to give you an illustration, let's suppose you want to homeschool your child. You want to educate your own kid, and you want to do it in your own home school. And you'll find in Missouri, as an illustration, we have very little restrictions here. There's a little bit of government control over homeschooling education, but not much. The little bit that's here hasn't bothered me hasn't oppressed me. I don't like any intrusion by government, but you know, if there's a little bit, you know, we can tolerate that. Now, the worst state in the union for a homeschool is Pennsylvania. And there's got to be a reason for that. And there is. And that is the government officials in Pennsylvania govern homeschools with an iron hand. You have to be, you have to submit forms and get licenses and regulated from beginning to end and conduct tests and so on. And the best state in the union for homeschooling is Alaska. It's Alaska. They don't care. They'll actually pay you to homeschool. They don't care if you homeschool at all. So here again, there's taxes and regulations and socialism. For instance, in California, if you want to build a house, it's going to cost you $30,000 on average just to get the permits to build it. Here where I live in Ozark County, Missouri, I don't even need a building permit. I need to build whatever I want, wherever I want to build it. Well, I shouldn't say whenever. If you want to put in a septic system, you've got to have a minimum of 3 acres. There's a requirement there. But if you've got 5 acres of ground, you can just go out here and build. Now, that's pretty good. That is very conducive to business. And as a businessman, I can tell you that if I had to choose between living and doing business in California and living and doing business in South Dakota or Missouri, I would not live in California. In fact, I'm from California. I was born there, and I lived there, did business in California. And back in 1972, I took a look at the business atmosphere in California, and I said, enough's enough, and I moved to Idaho. Now, Idaho is one of those really friendly business states. So if you're looking for a place that you want to relocate to, Idaho is a great place. Missouri is a great place. South Dakota is a great place. There's a number of states in the union that are great places, you know, for you to relocate to, other than New York, Florida, Pennsylvania, California, Washington, Oregon. And you'll find that you're going to have a whole lot more freedoms in those states than we will in, say, California or Pennsylvania. Now, going on into the future, is it always going to be that way? Is South Dakota always going to be like Missouri and Idaho, good places for us to live and do business? Well, if the New World Order gang gets their way, the answer will be no. And there are pressures and there are events afoot. There are policies and agendas in motion that should tell us as we progress out into the future about what we can be expecting. It's you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Now, how's this thing going to work out over the next 10, 20, 30 years? You know, over your working lifetime. If you're 30 years old today, over the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, over the next period of your life, what can you expect? Well, remember, last week we talked about nuclear weapons. This week, from the same book, Strategic Relocation, there's a section in here on government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights, written by the same guy, Joel Skousen. He's a conservative fellow. I don't know who it was that wrote None Dare Call It Conspiracy and The Naked Communist and a number of books on communism and tyranny, but it's some of his relatives, if you can't have the name Skousen, that's an odd name to start with, writing all these books. This guy, Joel Skousen, comes from a family or a long line of conservatives from Utah. Utah's a pretty conservative state. And Idaho is another very conservative state. If you'll take a look at the conservatives in the conservative states, you'll find that you'll have more liberty, more business opportunity in those conservative states than you do in the liberal states like New York and Pennsylvania and California. So where you have large population densities and huge megalopolises like Los Angeles and the San Francisco Bay Area, New York City and so on, you'll find that there's more regulation and control than there is if you get out into the rural, urban countryside like Idaho, Utah, Missouri, and South Dakota and so on. Now, there's a couple, three exceptions. Here in this state, Missouri, we're barred from having midwives. Midwives. So if you want to have a home birth and a midwife, boy, they'll lock you up in jail. If you want to educate your kid in home school, they don't care. So that's not just schizophrenia there. That's a all-powerful governmental institution that would like to interfere in and to get control over you. They haven't done it yet, but they're working towards that goal. Whereas in New York, Pennsylvania, and California, they've already accomplished their goal. And that's why we find so many businessmen leaving California, New York, and Pennsylvania and relocating their businesses and their homes and lives in places like Missouri, South Dakota, Utah, and Idaho. It's just a natural process. Now, one group of people that really don't like much in the way of government regulation are the Amish. And the Amish, who were originally called Anabaptists in Europe, were persecuted in Europe. They're a very hardworking group of people, and they produce a lot of wealth. And whenever you have hardworking people that produce a lot of wealth, you'll also find around them a large group of people who are lazy and don't work and want to share that wealth. It's just inevitable. It's the way life is. So when you're looking in a beehive, you'll find that there are worker bees, and they just work themselves to death. They're all out working and producing honey and nectar and propolis and just building hives, and they're just working their hearts out. But inside that hive, there are guard bees. They produce nothing and consume much. There are drone bees. They're all needed. I mean, I'm not suggesting to you that you don't need a drone bee, but you don't need very many of them, and they don't produce anything, and they consume a lot. So the bee colony, they're pretty crafty critters there. They limit the number of non-productive bees that there are in the hive. So they kill the drones off, and they just make a certain number of guard bees and water carrier bees. You know, bees that are doing something that promotes the colony, they tolerate, and those that don't, they get rid of. Well, here in human society, we've got this thing backwards, and we're working hard to preserve the non-producers, and we're penalizing killing and throwing out of the hive the workers and the producers. Now, if bees did that, their colony would collapse. In human experience, the same thing happens. If you take a look throughout history, and we go back to the Babylonians, Assyrians, Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, we find that all of those great empires and civilizations that we read about of our past history have all become history. They're all dead. They all died, and they were all destroyed, and they were put out of business. And so writers, historians over the years have taken a look at these institutions like the Roman Empire, Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and tried to analyze it to find out what causes that. What is it about human beings that are living in an organized society that causes them to start off from poverty and then go through a period of work, building, progress, great works, and then they go into decline, and then they finally are destroyed, taken captive, put back into chains, and then some new empire takes their place. And the upshot of it was, in Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, is that he said, well, one of the things that happens is that religion declines. A belief in something bigger than themselves, a god, no matter who that god might be, religion declines. They notice that there is a tendency for a centralization of power, that the government becomes all-powerful and the people become vassal serfs and workers for the state. And so the state emerges. And as a result of that, business and industry declines. There's a debasement of the currency. The money supply is debased. That's what happened in the Roman Empire. That's what we see happening in America and indeed around the world today. We see that religion has been replaced by a new religion called evolution and science. We find that the state has come in to take the place of God and provides for our health, safety, and welfare. We find that there is a debasement of the currency, that is, the money supply is being destroyed. And we find that crime increases, so crime comes into it. An inability or an unwillingness to deal with the criminal elements so that the workers can go out and work and produce. And after all, the thing that makes civilization worthwhile, the thing that makes your standard of living, is your ability to get up in the morning unimpeded, nobody's bothering you, get in your car, drive down to a job, and work and produce, and then walk home or walk out of the factory or the plant with a paycheck every once in a while. Now, that isn't the way it works in a lot of places around the world. You don't just jump in your car and travel. You know, North Korea, you know, doesn't have those kinds of liberties, and they don't have that kind of a business infrastructure where you can just get up in the morning, brush your teeth, and pack your lunch, jump in the car, drive to work, produce, and take a paycheck and go home. And that's because out in the real world, in North Korea, for every worker, there's another guy over here that's a consumer. Now, if you'll think about this in a positive light, there are producers and there are consumers. Now, all of us are consumers. All of us need to eat. We need to buy gasoline for our cars. We burn up gasoline. We wear our clothes out, and so we have to have new clothes. We have to have all of these things that we use in life, you know, food, clothing, and shelter. And we have to produce those things. And so far here in the United States, there are more producers than there are consumers. And we're producing more than we consume. And so when we do that, we have prosperity. You know, if you're making $1,000 a month and you save 250 of it, and you force yourself to live on 750, and you're saving $250 a month, at the end of the year, you'll have $3,000 saved. See? That means that you have a surplus. You have prosperity. You have more than you produced. You have saved more than you consumed. Now, if on the other hand you make $1,000 a month, but you consume $1,250, at the end of the year you have a $3,000 debt. It's not unmanageable, but you know, your next year you're going to have to reduce your standard of living by 25%. And if you can't do it voluntarily, then at some point in time you'll go bankrupt, and then it will be enforced upon you by circumstances and events that you don't have any control over. And then you're going to suffer some losses. And these losses then, and this enforcement upon you becomes tyranny. And you're not going to like that. It's not going to feel good at all. So one of our founding fathers years ago said that he who is governed best is governed least. Now, out in California, the people in California cannot build a house without government intrusion. They have to have somebody tell them when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. I think if there was a building contractor in California, and he came here to Missouri where he doesn't have to have a building permit, I don't think he could build a house. I don't think he'd know how to conduct himself. He would be relying upon a building inspector to come out and inspect his work to see if it was satisfactory. I don't think he could determine for himself what size header he should put in that doorway. And he'd just need somebody to tell him. Now, I say that with a little tongue-in-cheek jest here for you contractors out in California. Because, see, here, when we build a house, there isn't anybody to come along and tell us, hey, that header's too small and the door's going to fall in. Or, hey, that isn't going to work. The roof's going to blow off, you know, or something else. We don't have an earthquake inspector come out here and dictate to us, you know, how we should build it, or a tornado inspector who says, hey, this house needs to be built tornado-proof or so on. Those of us that live here in the tornado belt, in Tornado Alley, we build houses for strong winds. And we don't do that because somebody tells us to. I have built several buildings here. Nobody ever came along and told me to use ring shank nails when I built this building. I did it all by myself, and I did it in my own self-interest to keep it from blowing away when there's a strong, not a hurricane or tornado, but a strong thunderstorm. And if I lived in California, I think I'd probably build my house to withstand earthquakes in a location that probably wasn't going to turn to jello and swallow my house up in my own self-interest. Before there were building inspectors and zoning and planning regulations, there were people building houses in California. And they did it all by themselves without any government intrusion whatsoever. And it didn't cost them $30,000 before they drove the first nail into the first board. So if you want to know why housing costs are so high in California, well, the first $30,000 is in permits. And then it gets expensive as you continue on. Now, that government intrusion is the cause of the demise of these great civilizations and empires. Now, here in the United States, if you take a look at where we're at, 51% of the people in this country receive some kind of government largesse, some kind of a government check, some kind of a government benefit. 49% receive nothing. That's pretty ominous. Now, it may be that you only receive $50 a month from the government and so on. Well, okay. But there are a lot of people that are on total disability. There are a lot of people that are on Social Security, and they don't produce anything, and they consume much. And everything that's being consumed is a net loss to the economy as a whole. And you know, if you've got a quart of milk and you put it on the table and you pour out two glasses and two children drink two glasses, you have consumed half of your milk. You see, and now you've only got two glasses of milk left. Two glasses are now gone. Now, if you've got a cow and this cow produces, say, 2 gallons a day and you consume 1 gallon a day, you've got an extra gallon a day to sell. You have more milk than you know what to do with. If, on the other hand, your cow goes dry, and then you have the same demands, we would like to have a gallon of milk a day, but we're now getting none, now you have a deficit. That's all your life is concerned with. It's your standard of living. And governments control that standard of living. And when government comes in and gives somebody $50, government first had to go out somewhere and take $50 from somebody else, because government doesn't produce anything. And if any of you people out there believe that government produces something, can you tell me what it is, how much of it, where is it being stored, and then send me an email and tell me about it, would you? Now, people believe that governments are necessary. People believe that health care is necessary. People believe that licenses are necessary. Taxes are necessary. Regulation is necessary. That guns aren't necessary and we need to get rid of them. Health care is necessary. Midwives aren't. And homeschool isn't. And as a result of that, we have an outcome. And that outcome, if you're a public school enthusiast, isn't a problem to you. But if you're a homeschool enthusiast, then it's a problem to you. If you'd like to have your baby at home with a midwife and your government says, no, you can't do that, all of a sudden it's a burden upon one class of people and it's a benefit to somebody else. Now, here in America, we like to think of the majority rules, that the majority is always right. Well, always bear in mind that it was the majority of people that elected Richard Nixon. It was the majority of people that elected Lyndon Johnson, who was conducting the Vietnam War, who fell into a disfavor, if you remember, during the Vietnam War and said, I do not choose to run, 1968. And who was it that voted for George Bush? Wasn't it the majority? Now, this begins to tell us something, because the majority isn't always right. And sometimes we make mistakes, but the majority never admits to their mistakes, which compounds our problem over the long haul. I have asked people for years if they voted for Richard Nixon. I have never met a person that voted for Richard Nixon. Not once. So if you voted for Richard Nixon, would you send me an email and confess? Do that for me, would you? I think everybody would admit today that that was a mistake. How about Lyndon Johnson? How many of you voted for Lyndon back in 64? Do you remember that? You had a choice between Barry Goldwater and Lyndon Johnson, and you elected Lyndon Johnson, who later became so unpopular that he couldn't run for re-election in 1968. Same thing happened here with George Bush. Now, I would contend that the first thing we need to do is admit that we made a mistake. So you people in California ought to, you know, take a good, long, hard look at where you're at. You're bankrupt, insolvent. Your credit's no good. And there are going to be some outcomes and repercussions that come from that. Now, how did you people get there? Because the people in North Dakota aren't there. The people in North Dakota are doing well, thank you. Their unemployment rate's 3.7%. They've got a government budget surplus. Everything's going fine in North Dakota. And you people in California, New York, and around the world, around the country here, you're hurting. Now, there has to be some logic, some reason, some common sense that comes out of this. Now, if we just took a look and asked, well, what in the hell are the people up in North Dakota doing that's different than what the people in California are doing? And maybe we could learn from the people in North Dakota. And that's what I do as a businessman. When I see somebody that's successful, making money, his business is running great, then I go to that guy and I say, hey, tell me what it is that you're doing here. I go into Walmart and I watch the Walmart people. I walk into Kmart and I look at the Kmart people. Why don't you just do that? Walk into a Walmart store and just observe. Take a look at the people who are working in the store. Take a look at their uniforms. Take a look at their work habits, what's going on there. And then go on down to your local Kmart store and then just make the same observation. And you're going to see day and night. There is no bewilderment in my mind as to why Walmart is a success and Kmart is a failure. And if I was running the Kmart store, what I would do is I would go down and I would hire several of those Walmart employees, bring them in, and start teaching my Kmart employees to emulate what they're doing at Walmart. I may never overtake Walmart, but I can at least do as well as they're doing by doing what they do. I mean, that's just common sense. Now, the people at Kmart have not figured that out yet, and they probably never will. The people of California have not figured out that they should take a look at the successful states like Idaho and North Dakota and Missouri. What are those people doing? Now, Missouri is a very low tax state, as is North Dakota and Idaho. California is a very high tax state, and they want to raise your taxes even higher. So, do high taxes go along with successful government and successful business in a state? Or is it synonymous with, or does it go to, a problem that develops and people want to move out and they don't want to do business in that state? Just ask yourself, which is which? And then, you know, if you want high taxes, I'm not here to tell you people in California to lower your tax rate. God love you. If you think high taxes are good, why don't you double them? If you people in California, honest to God, believe that high taxes is a benefit to government and the people that live there, if the tax rate that you have today is good, wouldn't doubling your tax rate be doubly gooder? Huh? Wouldn't it? That's the formula that I use. If something's good, then why don't you double it? And then it'll be twice as good. Now, this guy, Joel Skousen, wrote us a neat little section here. Starts on page 145. He calls it government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights. We'll take that up from Joel Skousen right after this. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, that free 4-hour introductory CD package is on our website and can be downloaded from our website to yours free of charge. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights. This government intrusion is something that goes on worldwide. We hear horror stories here in America about what happened to you Canadians and Australians when the government came in and took all of your guns away. Now, for the most part, the average Joe Sixpack does not need a gun. I mean, if you stop and think about how often you use a gun, you know, it's a very rare event. But when you need a gun, it's something that you need right now. You know, it's something that's necessary and imperative at this moment in time. And guns, according to our Constitution, were never intended to hunt bear or deer with. They were intended to protect individual rights and property. That's the purpose behind them. Now, there are countries in the world that have unlimited gun rights, or nearly so. Israel is one, Switzerland is another. The United States is, somewhere in between. And then there are states in the world that don't want you to have a gun at all. You know, that's places like England and Australia and Canada, to name a couple of three. And generally, totalitarian police states, you know, like Russia, China, North Korea, they don't want you people to have guns because they don't think that you people can handle them. Now, here in America, when we had unlimited guns and we had unlimited freedom, or practically so, America became the wealthiest, most powerful, and influential government, state, power, economic power in the world. And then we got civilized and we thought, well, let's try a little regulation, a little communism, a little socialism. And we've been on a slippery slope from about 1933 to the present. Now, Joel Skousen makes this observation when he says, people all over the world will someday have to deal with a slow, methodical loss of liberty. This is not the work of some individual tyrant or for selfish reasons, nor is it the product of mere general socialist trends or by bullying public officials. What I'm going to describe to you is the systematic, methodical, and planned destruction of liberty. It is something that will have the longest and most far-reaching effects on your strategic efforts to find safety in the future. So in this section, I want to discuss in some detail the hidden conspiracy that is behind this process, which engulfs almost all of the national governments, and that fully intends to bring all of the nations of the world into a one-world system of total control. It is a great subject of derision on the part of the popular press, but nevertheless, I'm sure of its reality, and I've been scrutinizing the evidence for years, and it does add up. So coming right out of the chute, this guy, Joel Skousen, admits that he is a conspiracy theorist. So for all of my listeners out there, let me tell you that I am also. So if you want to laugh and hoot and jeer, get with it. Now, I'm prepared to offer names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence to support my belief in the conspiracy theory. I'm prepared to put my money where my mouth is. So sharpen your pencils here, boys and girls, on both ends, so you don't miss anything. Now let's take a look at how to track a conspiracy of power. Unfortunately, no one book or no one person can give you all of the evidence in a nutshell, because what we're dealing with here is two or three secret organizations with widespread powers. No one knows even a small percentage of the details, or even who specifically is at the top of these powerful combinations. By two or three, I think there is a separate Russian communist conspiracy, a separate Chinese conspiracy, both of which are cooperating and competing at the same time, and I think they ultimately intend to eliminate the power of the other in the next war. And I also believe the powerful group that controls Western governments actively works to facilitate communist takeovers to break down existing countries and to set the stage for a future rescue by globalist puppets, all in the quest to create conflict leading to a new world order. Okay? I have a similar bent or a similar belief, a little bit different. I plug in Bible prophecy. Revelation 12, verse 9, for instance, tells us that the whole world has been deceived. The whole world. I looked at that some years ago and I said, gee, could that include little Georgie Gordon? And that's because all of us are motivated by these five motivators. Now, with your sharpened pencil here, children, write this down. You are motivated by vanity. You are a vain person. That's not a bad thing necessarily. You're designed that way. You're motivated by jealousy. When you see somebody have something, you want to take it away from them. It isn't that you want to go out and make one just like theirs. You want to take theirs away from them. You want to take them off of their throne and elevate yourself over them. That's natural. It's normal. You're designed that way. You're filled with lust. You want things that you don't need, can't have, shouldn't have, and really can't use. But you're going to fight and claw, and you're going to seize and possess those things, irrespective of how they harm you, such as illicit sex and drugs. And that's normal. Everybody does it. Everybody is motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, and fourth is greed. You have an insatiable desire for more. It doesn't make any difference how much money you have. You want more. Donald Trump has scads and scads of money, as does Bill Gates and a number of other billionaires around the world. It doesn't make any difference how much money Bill Gates has. He wants more. Last time I heard, he had $37 billion, and if you were to ask Bill, he'd say, well, I'd be happier if I had $43 billion. I don't know what the hell he would do with the additional $6 billion, but, you know, I don't care how much money I have. As an old man, I can tell you I have never had enough money in my life. It never made a bit of difference to me whether I had a bank account with lots of numbers in it or if I had a bank account with no numbers. Never happy. I've never been happy with the amount of money that I've had. I ain't happy with it right now. I'm out working trying to make more money. That's why you go to work every day. You want more money. You don't have enough. Now, I could tell you that the average person in the world makes $2 a day. 3 billion people on this planet make $2 a day. To Americans, Australians, and New Zealanders, we gasp and say, that's impossible. You can't live on $2 a day. Half the people on this planet live on $2 a day. And they pay the same price for rice where they live in Pakistan as you people do in San Francisco, California. And no, they don't have houses, and they don't have automobiles, and they don't think about, you know, about having a, you know, a vacation, you know, on the Riviera. It doesn't enter their minds. And then finally over here is fear. The last motivator is fear. And you are a fearful and timid little creature. So you're filled with vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And it's through these five motivators of human nature that we control you. Your government controls you through these five motivators. And indeed, the Walmart store controls you through those five motivators. And the people at Kmart haven't figured that out yet, and that's why they're failing. Now, when we send people to sales school, when we train people in sales, if you're a salesman and you haven't been trained, maybe you don't know about vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, but when we put you through school, we teach you vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear so that you can increase your sales. And the best salesmen are those that understand these five motivators of human nature. So when you want to sell somebody something, you're looking for what we call the buying signs, the buying signs. And once we find your buying signs, then we tell you what you want to hear. That's called the sales pitch. I got your buying sign. Now I need to give you the sales pitch, and I'm going to tell you what it is that you want to hear based upon what your buying signs tell me. And in this process, I'm going to appeal to one or more of these five motivators, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, to close the sale. And it'll work every single time. I can sell you communism. I can sell an Eskimo or refrigerator in Fairbanks, Alaska. I can sell you national health care insurance. I can sell you building permits, zoning and planning, more taxation, more regulation, more socialism. I can sell you less privacy, gun control. I can motivate you to buy licenses, give up your health care, surrender your midwife, and send your kid to public school. I can do all of the above and more as soon as I can read your buying signal, give you my sales pitch, and appeal to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And that's what's happened to us, and that's what's going to continue to happen to us. And as long as you can be manipulated, there's somebody out there that's going to be jerking your chain. Somebody out there is going to jerk your chain. And you're going to follow them. Now, here in the United States, we're in the process of having national socialized medicine stuck up our hind ends sideways. I just saw a number last night on the Lehrer News Hour said, 53% are now opposed to the president's health care program, and 43% are in favor, and a few don't know whether their hind ends are bored or punched. But it is now switched, and the majority now, according to the polls, are just barely. It's about 50-50, but just barely. So the president and the Congress are in a panic to get this socialized medicine passed before any of the rest of you jump ship. Now, if I was a betting man, which I am, and if I was going to put some money on socialized medicine in America, I would bet on the president and the Congress to give you socialized medicine in America shortly, which is another step in the wrong direction. But, you know. As Joel Skousen says, well, you know, people all over the world will someday have to deal with a slow, methodical loss of liberty, and that's what we're dealing with here. Now, I'm going to deal with socialized medicine just like everybody else in the country is going to deal with it. I'm going to avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, I'm 70 years old, and I do not draw Social Security. I paid into it, and I never took a dime out of it, and I'm not going to. Knock on wood, as my old granny used to say. And that's because Social Security is a socialist trap. And about 40 million Americans are caught in that trap. And if you were to ask them, they'd say, "Well, I love it. I'm enjoying it, and I'm just tickled to death with my Social Security checks every month." And those are people that can't count. They don't have a good grasp or understanding of arithmetic or mathematics or percentages. They haven't got a clue as to how much money they paid in, how much money they're getting back, how much it cost them, or how much liberty, how much of their freedom is being surrendered, or how much better off they would have been without it. They haven't got a clue. And they're very happy. They are singing the praises of Franklin D. Roosevelt to their graves. They love it. God love them, and I'm not opposed to them. If that's what you want in life, then get after it. What I'm opposed to is that they're so evangelistic. They are so sold on the program, they want to force it on me against my will and over my objection. Here, for instance, the president says he wants to have national health care insurance for every American. Well, look, I'm one of you, and I don't want it. But you're going to force it on me against my will and over my objection. And that's what takes my liberty away. That's what takes my freedom away. I'm not objecting to you having national health care insurance. God love you, partner. If that's what you want, get after it. But I don't want. Now, I'm sure there's a bunch of people out there that are sodomites, and they love sodomy, and they practice it, and they're great guys, no doubt. And they want everybody to be a sodomite. Well, I don't want to. Would it be all right for you if I was the only American that opted out of the sodomy program? Would that offend you? And the answer is, hell yeah, it would. It offends every sodomite out there. They just can't live until everybody joins their club. They haven't figured out that not everybody wants to join their club. And so they want to impose their brand of tyranny. Now, when the tyrants come to enforce this national health care insurance upon you, they see that, they believe in it, and they want you to share in the wonderful health care insurance program that they're bringing to you. They believe in it. They want it. And they want you to have it too. Now, I just happen to be one of those that doesn't want it. And somebody said, "Well, you're uninformed." Okay. I don't deny it. Would it be all right with you if an uninformed, simple-minded jerk like George Gordon, who hasn't got brains at all, just a dummy, would it be all right with you if I could just opt out, live my life without national health care insurance? And the evangelists of health care insurance say, hell no, you got to join us like everybody else. They just cannot live with one other person out there who is not in the program with them. We had that problem with Catholicism back in the Middle Ages. The Catholics just could not live with Protestants. The Protestants said, "Well, look, we want to go over here and worship God our way. Let us opt out." And the Catholics said, hell no. So they gathered up the Protestants and put them in the barns and burned them up. I don't ever remember hearing any stories about Protestants of any stripe gathering up Catholics and burning them to death and burning them at the stake and torturing them to death to make them recant from their religion. I don't remember a single Catholic being persecuted. And that's an interesting historical event. Can any of you Catholics out there point to one event in history where the Protestants went out and persecuted you people because of your religious beliefs? Because history is replete with Catholicism persecuting the dissenters. I just thought I'd throw that out there. So Catholics are intolerant people. I avoid Catholics like AIDS, herpes, and PT. I try to stay away from you Catholic people because you're religious and you're zealous. God love you. I don't mind you practicing your religion, but you know you can't live with people like me. You have to convert me to Catholicism, and if you don't, you have to kill me for my good, for my benefit. And I just don't think that killing me is a good idea. So I'm sorry to report to you that I disagree with you. Now, with that much said, let's take a look here at how to track a conspiracy of power. You know, unfortunately, no one book or person can give us all the evidence or the answers. But ultimately, the Western conspiracy will foment a war to bring about global government. And in the process, they intend to subdue the Russian conspiracy, which they're presently covering for and keeping alive by aid and trade. Now, I can't prove all that I just said, but I believe it's true. And what I can evidence of is that there is a very powerful conspiracy that entirely controls the United States and European governments. And while I can't tell you their names, I can demonstrate to you by an analysis of certain massive cover-ups that this group exists and that it has enough power to cover up any number of messy assassinations and corrupt practices, you know, like the Kennedy assassination, two of them. Okay, now, through the testimony of some innocent and courageous bystanders, we can also track who contacted who and when during a portion of the cover-up, and who did the threatening afterward to deter any future testimony. Oh, no, who would want to do such a thing? These kinds of actions tell us two definite things, that someone is trying to suppress the truth of what really happened, and that the orders came from someone high up in government. And in the process, we can know who are some of the mid-level operators. Okay, so if we'll take a look at this pragmatically, now this author here, this is the guy who says that he can't identify who the people are at the top. I think I can. I'm going to tell you who they are. At the Bank of International Settlements, the BANK of International Settlements, called the BIS, is composed of 13 men. Those 13 men set the policy here in the West. In fact, they set policy worldwide in economic affairs. And if I was going to name 13 co-conspirators right there, those are the top 13 men. Now, we have some other groups of people out here that are very powerful, you know, like the Bilderbergers and Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. These are very powerful international organizations that contain the list of the who's who in politics, economics, business around the world. And these are the policymakers. These are the movers and the shakers. Now, to say that David Rockefeller is the kingpin, I couldn't say that. I don't know that anybody else can. But listen, he's a very powerful fellow. I mean, this guy's no slouch. Henry Kissinger, he's another one. And Barack Obama is in that clique. He's a very powerful fellow. I don't know who's got the most power, but it isn't Barack Obama. It wasn't George Bush. It wasn't Bill Clinton. And we can see that by their actions. We can see that by what happens out here in the real marketplace. But there are very powerful people out there, and these very powerful people, you know, David Rockefeller, when he speaks, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are going to listen to a Henry Kissinger or a Zbigniew Brzezinski or a David Rockefeller a whole lot sooner than they're going to listen to you or me in the voting booth with our ballots out here voting for the president. And that's just the way reality is. And I think that all of you people out there ought to have brains enough to figure that out. Now, you might have a little bit of say, you and millions of others, when you go to the ballot box, but I think old Joe Stalin hit the nail on the head when he said, it isn't who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that counts. So tuck that one away in your heart until next time when we take up the subject of government intrusion upon your liberty and individual rights here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review next time. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.